Castle Rock Radio, the future of radio.
Welcome to Food Integrity Now, promoting integrity in our global food supply. I'm Susan Wright, and I'm here with my two co-hosts, Carol Gervais and Matt Spaeth. Welcome.
Hi, Susan.
Good to be here.
Well, this week, we are glad to have back on the show F. William Engdahl. William was with us talking about his book in December, Seeds of Destruction, which is a history of the use of food as a weapon and how that plays into where we are right now with genetically modified foods in the food supply. And he's back with us today. He is a historian, researcher, and he is the author of several books. He has written A Century of War, Anglo-American Oil Politics and the New World Order, Seeds of Destruction, which I just mentioned, Full Spectrum Dominance, Totalitarian Democracy, and the New World Order, which is what we want to focus on today, and Gods of Money, Wall Street, and the Death of the American Century. And I believe that he just finished and will be releasing another book. Is that right, William?
It's a book on the manufactured myth of oil scarcity or energy scarcity for the last 150 years and how certain powerful figures such as the Rockefeller, Standard Oil Trust, ExxonMobil, and so forth have used that to literally control entire nations, create revolutions, crises, wars, and so forth. So it goes into the question such as who is really behind the myth of peak oil, how is oil really generated? We probably have enough energy in the bowels of the earth to last us for the next million years with no problem at all. So
yeah,
that's something that makes the Wall Street banks that finance oil drilling and Halliburton and people like that very unhappy.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, in fact, I read an article on your site. And would you give us your website for listeners who might want to go check
it out? Engdahl, E-N-G-D-A-H-L, oilgeopolitics, all one word, oilgeopolitics, G-E-O-P-O-L-I-T-I-C-S, .net, engdahl.oilgeopolitics.net. Or if anybody Googles F. William Engdahl, you'll come to it fairly quickly.
Yeah, your article on Haiti kind of illustrates what you just said. I think it really made it clear to me. Kind of how there's been this belief system set forth that that there is this scarcity and it has interesting effects. But let's go to your book, Full Spectrum Dominance. Where does that title come from?
Well, it comes from, like many of these things, from the Pentagon PR department. It's the title they give to their mission, if you will, after the end of the Cold War, which is to have total dominance over air, land, sea, space, outer space, and cyberspace, as they put it. In other words, to control the entire universe.
Pretty
a very
ambitious.
Modest agenda, and we might ask, why do we need that if the major enemy of the Cold War has raised the yellow flag of the white flag of surrender 20 years ago, namely Soviet Union, collapsed the Warsaw Pact military alliance, dismantled the Soviet Union itself, and opened its borders up to Western investment. Why do we need this? The American military outspends the next 41 nations in the world combined. As one retired admiral, U.S. admiral, said, I think the only people we're competing with is ourselves because no one's even close. So this is really the only way to interpret it is an agenda of empire by some powerful forces who want to use that military to control the world, to loot anything that's not under their control, and use the military to do it.
So, speaking of the Cold War, so in your book you talk about that the Cold War is not over with. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, quite interestingly, when Gorbachev, he was the head of the Soviet Union at the time of the Reagan-Bush era, when he essentially said, we give up. We can't compete anymore. We are bankrupt financially, economically. Our people are revolting because we've had to suck them dry to feed the military competition with the United States, and you have won. So we want to have a peaceful resolution and end the Cold War. So at that point, James Baker, who was Father Bush's foreign secretary of state, he negotiated with Gorbachev and said, we'll make a solemn pledge that the U.S. will not expand NATO to the east. And that was a Russian demand, a Soviet demand. And lo and behold, once the Soviet Union collapsed and all pandemonium broke loose in the early 90s, what happens? But NATO and the U.S. start pushing NATO from one into the other former Warsaw Pact Soviet sphere countries, and uses all sorts of inducements, enticements, and so forth, security. Poland becomes a member of NATO. The Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia all become members of NATO. The Hungarians become members of NATO. The Czech Republic becomes a member of NATO. And at a certain point, it's very clear there's a very strange agenda of NATO. Why do we need NATO today? This is the year 2011. It's 20 years after the collapse of the Soviet Union. NATO was created as a Western, well, let's take the Hollywood PR version of NATO's creation. It was created as a counterweight to the military threat of the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact, which actually was created as a response to NATO, by the way. So why do we need NATO after the collapse of the Soviet Union? The enemy is surrendered. Why do we need NATO? Well, that question was deftly swept under the rug by Father Bush, by Bill Clinton, by George W. Bush, and certainly by Obama, who's bringing NATO to Afghanistan. He wants to have NATO around the world, it seems.
So what's the agenda on that?
Well, the agenda is, I think, madness. I think this is a strategy on automatic pilot. They don't have a plan B, the elites that after the end of the Cold War, they said, okay, now we'll fill the power vacuum. We'll be the only force on the planet who calls all the shots. We'll set the terms. We'll create the economic conditions for American banks and American companies to come in and suck these economies dry from China to Africa to Latin America to wherever, to Europe. And after the collapse of the subprime bubble in 2007, that agenda began to run into serious problems. And I think what we're seeing is kind of a death agony of a system that really ran off the tracks back in 1971 when Nixon took the dollar off of the gold exchange standard of Bretton Woods. And not that gold is something magical, but at that point, the U.S. had no check and balance on the creation of fiat money. Except for the military power of the U.S. to blackmail Europe and to blackmail Japan and other powers to buy U.S. government debt, which is the system that exists up until now. Mm-hmm. So I think that whole system is really at the breaking point, and how that breaks. I mean, they bought a little time in 2009, end of 2009, by engineering a Greek crisis. Goldman Sachs was on the inside of that whole operation, mm-hmm. along with the rating agencies, Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and Ben Bernanke down there at the Fed in Washington, bad-mouthing the euro. That bought the dollar a little bit of a temporary lease on life, but it's only temporary because the debt creation of the dollar is simply, it's gone ballistic, it's out of control. And at a certain point, bond markets, pension funds, conservative investors have to take that into account.
What goes into the engineering of a crisis?
Let's talk specifically. Which crisis?
Let's talk about Egypt. The one you just mentioned, the crisis in Greece, for example.
Oh, okay. That is a very interesting one. Just at the time it erupted, the Chinese, I'm talking now November 2009, the Chinese central bank was talking about being very upset with the fiscal lack of control of Washington and the deficits, $1 trillion plus per year, as far as the eye can see, and said that it's going to start looking around for other options to invest Chinese trade surpluses. Well, the only other option that's credible at this point is of course the euro, which was slowly emerging as a substitute for the dollar as central bank reserve. And I think something like 25% of central bank reserves for the Greek crisis were in euros, and 66% or so were in dollars. The rest were diverse currencies. So at just that point, what happens when the dollar, everybody, leading economists all around the world are predicting a dollar free fall because it's the situation is so desperate. Just at that point, the Papandreou government announces that Greece has a 14% to GDP fiscal deficit in the budget, and that the previous conservative governments had lied, and they had hidden the debt with help of Goldman Sachs in 2002 to allow Greece to qualify to enter the euro currency zone with a 3% deficit to GDP, so using derivatives and all sorts of things. So that was the first clue. Goldman Sachs was on the inside of this, enabling the fraud or the deception back almost 10 years ago.
Mr. Aindal, we have to interrupt you just for a moment to take this quick commercial break for a message from our sponsors, and we'd love to get back to this and hear more what you have to say about the engineering of a crisis. You're listening to Food Integrity Now. We'll be right back.
I'm Carol Gervais, and I'm a certified life coach and one of the hosts of the Food Integrity Now show right here on Castle Rock Radio. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild and free dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity like the ones at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. If this is something you've only dreamt about doing, I invite you to mark this off your bucket list now and join me for an all-inclusive trip to swim with the wild dolphins. Your trip to paradise will include organic gourmet meals, ocean waterfront accommodations, Lomi Lomi massage, and much more. What are you waiting for? Now is the time to make your dream a reality. For more information, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or contact me at carol@coachwithcarol.com or 719-687-7447. Once again, that's 719-687-7447. Mahalo.
If you are looking for some flavorful, healthy, fresh food, come out to Maximilian's Cafe in Woodland Park, Colorado, focusing on local, fresh ingredients with a changing seasonal menu. Located at 209 East Midland Avenue, Woodland Park, Colorado, right off Highway 24 in downtown. Our walls are full of local artist artwork, and on Friday and Saturday nights, we feature local singers, songwriters, and performers to entertain you while you relax and enjoy a fun environment, a glass of wine, and fantastic food. Open 7 days a week from 11 to 9 p.m., 11 to 8 p.m. on Sunday and Monday.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. Our guest today, F. William Engdahl. Before the break, Mr. Engdahl was discussing with us the engineering of a crisis, specifically the crisis that was engineered in Greece and Goldman Sachs' involvement in that crisis. Mr. Engdahl, would you please continue?
Sure. The point about this is that it's a war, financial warfare, economic warfare between the dollar as a reserve currency and the euro as a potential replacement. That's a geopolitical game of the highest stakes, because if the U.S. loses that dollar reserve role, then the Chinese de facto no longer will be financing, through their buying of U.S. government debt, will be financing the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and other places that are also against Chinese state interest. But the point about the Greek crisis is, just at the moment the dollar was about to go into free fall, suddenly all eyes are focused on Greece and the Greek crisis being a euro crisis. So the pundits in the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Anglo-American financial media really started focusing on this. And there are huge weaknesses in the euro, there's no question about it, but the 800-pound gorilla in the China shop is the American dollar and not the euro. But for a short period of time, all eyes were turned on the euro, and then George Soros and three or four of the largest hedge funds in the world had a nice little coffee chat in the apartment of one of them in New York City in February of 2010, where they talked about the Greek crisis. Now, I don't have to be a fly on the wall to imagine that they came to a certain consensus strategy to use their combined muscle to make a massive attack on Greece and the euro, and that drove the interest rate sky high. And at that point, Standard & Poor's downgraded it, just the point where the governments of the European Union, Germany, France, and the other governments announced agreement on an emergency rescue package for Greece and other potential countries like Portugal. Just at that day, Standard & Poor's downgraded the sovereign debt of Greece by three notches. Now, that meant Greece debt was now junk. And if you know anything about the bond markets, pension funds are forbidden to hold junk. They have to hold AAA quality or any grade above junk. Otherwise, they are forbidden. So that forced a massive sell-off of Greek debt, which was the plan. Then Bernanke chimes in, the Federal Reserve chairman, and starts talking about the unviable euro and so forth. So it was just a massive desperation attack from the dollar faction against the euro. It's not over yet by any means, by the way. It's the next contest will come in March when the European heads of state meet to talk about a proposal from Germany and France to restructure this whole Euroland to give an economic coordination element.
And what are you anticipating with that? What?
It's unclear.
Okay.
It's too early to call it. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be a big fight.
So what was the benefit of postponing the inevitable slide of the dollar by having the Greek market fall first?
Well, they're stalling for time and hoping that they can destabilize Europe enough that the U.S. will look good by comparison. I mean, so far it's kind of worked, but really intelligent fund managers that I know in Switzerland and Germany and in London and so forth see right through this facade. They see that the U.S. economy is a basket case, not an economy in recovery.
I want to shift to another area of the country, if you have any comments on Egypt and what you think is happening there, and if you feel like this crisis is being orchestrated, and why.
The Egypt revolution, some people in Washington are calling it creative destruction. This goes back to a stratagem that was unveiled by the Bush administration. It actually has its origins about 10 years earlier, but George W. Bush, after 9/11, unveiled a plan in front of the G8 countries called the Greater Middle East Project. And the map of the Greater Middle East Project that Bush was talking about went literally from Morocco or Gibraltar on the Atlantic coast of North Africa all the way across through the Middle East, up through Central Asia, and directly to the borders of China on Tibet. And as many irate Arabs, including Hosni Mubarak and the King of Saudi Arabia at the time, pointed out, this is not a greater Middle East. This is not a homogeneous cultural zone. This has huge differences in economic levels and cultural levels and everything else. And for the U.S. to make that a target for economic liberal reforms were the terms that they used. But what they want to do is break the economies open and give them IMF shock therapy like they did with Poland after 1991 or many of the Eastern European economies.
What is
IMF? Western corporations could come in and loot them and buy their assets for a dime on the dollar.
William, can you explain what IMF therapy? What did you mean by that? Does our listeners
Well, the International Monetary Fund was created in 1944 at the conference in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, when Roosevelt was president. And the idea of that, the conference was, the Bretton Woods Treaty was the arrangement of a post-war monetary order that would be a dollar-based system. That's important for people to understand.
Okay.
And that dollar-based system should be regulated by the International Monetary Fund, and one country has a veto right on that IMF policy, and that's Washington, U.S. Treasury.
Hmm.
And therefore, whenever there's a Russia crisis, whenever there's an Asia crisis, the U.S. will bring the IMF in and say, okay, you have to privatize, you have to cut your food subsidies, like they said in Tunisia. By the way, that was one triggering factor for the street protests in Tunisia. At the time when Wall Street speculators were ramping up the price of grain to levels that it saw back in 2008, just at that time the IMF says, Tunisia, you have to eliminate your state subsidies for food. Well, my God, talk about perfect timing for an explosion. The IMF was the instrument. So not many people realize that.
Hmm.
So the IMF has been used as an instrumentality of U.S. economic domination since the end of the, really since the end of the 1970s in Latin America with the debt crisis.
And in Egypt, it follows a specific pattern that you talked about in your book, that the U.S. or the Pentagon is used to destabilize. I noticed that it followed a pattern you call swarming. Mm-hmm. Can you describe that?
Well, interestingly enough, the lead organization in Egypt coordinating these hit-and-run protests and so forth, these are very sophisticated things. One thing I told on a recent interview with the Russian television station was that even if you include the Russian Revolution with Lenin, there's never been a revolution that's been a genuine, spontaneous explosion of the masses that goes to a successful conclusion. They're all kind of orchestrated using mass discontent, and Egypt is no exception. So the organization that's guiding this is called Kafaya, which means enough. And that's one of those catchy words that was used in a color revolution in Georgia in 2003. Interestingly enough, the same people are in both countries, the National Endowment for Democracy, Freedom House. These are all CIA, U.S. Intelligence, State Department front NGOs that run these regime changes all around the world and say, oh, no, that's not the U.S. government. That's these private NGOs. Well, they've been mucking around Egypt ever since for years, trying to create a post-Mubarak alternative. So they've been training youth, bringing them to Washington, meeting Hillary Clinton, and so forth. And the swarming element is really a technique that the RAND Corporation The RAND Corporation, for people who don't know, is research and development. It was set up by the U.S. Air Force as a private think tank to develop future warfare ideas after the end of the Second World War. And the RAND Corporation did a study in 2008 of CAFIA, the youth organization that's coordinating al-Baradei's campaign, as well as the Muslim Brotherhood and all these other supposedly disparate groups, the Communist Party of Egypt, under one umbrella, get rid of Mubarak. And the swarming is the idea that these protests are coordinated by Twitter, by SMS, by instant message. And, of course, you have agents, trained agents, planted in these mobs and give the signal. And then it's Twittered out so that thousands of youth then spontaneously appear to disappear from one protest site and go into another. They have satellite reconnaissance from the U.S. military and other devices that enable these key actors on the ground to coordinate these youth. So they call it swarming because it's like swarms of bees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's very hard for the traditional security services to defend against this because it's so spontaneous, right. Apparently.
Right.
And the RAND Corporation has studied this for years. They tested it first on Charles de Gaulle in 1968 with the French student revolution.
Yeah, mm-hmm. William, we're going to take a break on that note. And when we come back, I'd like you to finish explaining the swarming for us. But I also want to discuss the events of September 11th and how that precipitated the Patriot Act and that really destroyed Americans' constitutional freedoms all in the name of security. I think that's an important topic because of what's happening right now with them trying to get that passed again. And I understand it was not passed, but we'll see about that. So you are listening to Food Integrity Now with our guest, William Ingdahl. We will be right back.
Experiencing anxiety, anger, depression, or low self-esteem? Do you beat yourself up or sabotage what you truly want to achieve? Hi, this is Jeannie Smith, and at Open Heart Healing, I combine counseling, gestalt therapy, and Tai Chi energy work to assist those who truly desire to bring quality and joy back into their lives. My office is located on South Perry Street here in Castle Rock. Call me for a free consultation at 303-660-6373. Again, that's 303-660-6373, or visit me at openhearthealing.com.
Are you seeking understanding and assistance in healing your depression and anger or lack of passion? Hi, my name is Tammy Urbanek at Empowerment Through Healing, and I'm a medium clairvoyant who can work with your spirit guides to assist you. Your spirit guides can offer solutions and understanding at current life issues that you're facing. Visit www.empowermentthroughhealing.com for more information, and you can call me at 719-641-2017.
Linda Masterson, Soul Purpose Astrologer, works with astrological tools and with guides in the non-physical to assist ones in knowing their soul purpose. Important in this process is identification of significant blockages. In each session, tools are provided for working with self to clear resistance and free talents, skills, and abilities to fuller expression. The goal is to take responsibility for and to accelerate the healing process. Sessions are offered by Linda. Please visit Linda at lindamasterson.com or call 808-651-0307. Again, that's 808-651-0307.
Thank you. Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We have as our guest today William Engdahl, and he is discussing his book, Full Spectrum Dominance. And William, you were explaining to us about swarming and how that is used, especially through the social media route. You want to continue with that, and then we'll go, move on to 9/11.
Yeah. Well, basically, that's the central point, that these youth are brought out of the country, usually, typically to, if not to the U.S., to some other country that has already done such a thing successfully. And they're trained, they're taught by the people who've done this previously in various color revolutions, as they're called. And there's a textbook that's put out by a fellow named Gene Sharp, who has something, strangely enough, he calls the Albert Einstein Institution up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Harvard University is. And Sharp admitted in one interview that he calls it the Albert Einstein Institution to simply make it sound serious. But what he does is he's developed a handbook which has been translated into numerous languages where these color revolutions have been started, as a how-to manual for nonviolence as a method of warfare. And literally, he uses retired Special Forces U.S. Army colonels, Robert Helvey among them, to teach these courses. So nonviolence sounds like Mahatma Gandhi and all these wonderful things, but this is really a State Department agenda of nonviolence to destabilize countries that don't do quite what Washington wants.
And that's because, you know, as our image has to be one of promoting democracy, not one of you know, going out and conquering the world or using underhanded strategies.
Well, the people who drafted the post-war order, which was called by Time Life magazine publisher Henry Luce back in 1941, the American Century. And the reason I call my book The Gods of Money, Wall Street, and the Death of the American Century is that the explosion of the subprime crisis in 2007 really marks the death of that project, the American Century. Not the death of America, but the death of that project. And they literally said, we're not going to make the mistake of the British or the French empires. We won't call ours an empire. We'll call ourselves the defenders of democracy. We're spreading the free enterprise system. We're spreading colonial liberation from the old European colonial empires and so forth. Because Americans don't like to think of themselves as imperial people. They want to think of themselves as nice, good guys. Mm-hmm. So that was brilliantly, I have to say, it was a brilliant tactic to package this in this kind of propaganda wrapping. But if you compare it with the British Empire, in certain ways, it's more brutal an empire than the British ever were with India and Africa.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think the whole agenda was behind 9/11? I know that a lot of people have theories, and some people have no idea. They just think that, you know, there was a terrorist attack, and now we need to be afraid. So what's your take on that?
I deliberately don't spend time on the details of 9/11. I think that's a dead-end street.
Right.
There's so much government disinformation around that. There's so many people in the 9/11 various truth organizations and so forth that throw in judo chops that, you know, you could just go nuts trying to track this. I don't think that's to get bogged down in that isn't very productive. I have my own thoughts on that. I've written a few things in Full Spectrum Dominance. But I think the main thing is to look at U.S. policy before 9/11 and look at it afterwards.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, you have the creation of what has to be called a police state regime, where debate, free expression, the traditional Bill of Rights of the American Constitution have, as you pointed out earlier, have simply been written out in a climate of fear and anxiety that was fostered by by the Bush administration after 9/11. The Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act, all of these things. And that people haven't risen up in revolt and said, look, enough is enough. These body scan searches at airports and all this indignity and humiliation that people are being put through is just an attempt to intimidate and terrorize and instill. You know, if elite circles who have an agenda of transforming the country have no other weapon, the weapon that's most effective is fear. If people are paranoid, they're terrified, they look at their neighbor has dark skin, they say, oh, he might be a terrorist, who knows, he has a funny accent and so forth, then these elites have won, they're laughing up their sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
So look at after 9/11, look at before 9/11.
Right, and a lot of
Bush administration, ostensibly 9/11 was done by a chap named Osama bin Laden, who's supposed to be a Saudi renegade billionaire heir to a Saudi construction family, to the royal house called the bin Ladens, friends of the Bush family and so forth. So Osama got trained by the Mujahideen, by the CIA in Afghanistan, and then he decided to wage this jihad or holy war against America. We're told, this is all what we're told. And then from a cave in Tora Bora or some godforsaken place in the mountains of Afghanistan, he supposedly engineers the most daring aerial assault on buildings, including the Pentagon, in the history of aerial warfare. No military pilot that I've spoken with and so forth can believe such a maneuver can be engineered. Certainly not by a bunch of amateurs who spent the night in a strip bar in Florida the day before, drinking and living it up, and were amateur pilots. They, you know, these are huge airplanes, very complex.
I don't know where.
But the other thing. Let me just throw one thing out for people to reflect on. Why is it, and I've seen the official arguments are unconvincing, why is it that, or what is the probability that in the first 93 minutes from the minute that the first airline from Boston should have been detected as off-programmed route, in those 93 minutes between that and the attack on the Pentagon, the two World Trade Towers, and the crash landing in Pennsylvania, we're told, not one F-16 NORAD interceptor jet was scrambled. Not mm-hmm. one.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked a friend who was a colonel in a European Air Force stationed in NATO headquarters in Brussels what the probability is of that happening through just completely chaotic procedures, and so he said zero, absolute zero. Mm-hmm. If a Piper Cub goes off route, within 5 minutes, jets are scrambled. So the idea that the Pentagon was so defenseless, zero chance that that could have happened. But let's not get bogged down into details. The government really needs to give its citizens an honest account, independent account, not run by Zelikoff and people who have a stake in the mythology. But why was it that we forgot about Osama bin Laden up there in Tora Bora, and suddenly, immediately, the focus of the war on terror that supposedly was responsible for this attack on America becomes Saddam Hussein down there in Iraq, who hates Osama bin Laden because Osama's stands for everything that Hussein is against. And, you know, suddenly this is used to manipulate the American public opinion to support a war in Iraq.
Well, I think that
people have to reflect. What were they being jerked? They're being mm-hmm. jerked like dogs on a chain. And at a certain point, you know, you got to say, wait a minute. wait a minute.
Where is this coming from, and what is the agenda
and
here?
So many Americans, I think, were paralyzed with fear that they just would believe anything. And, you know,
that's the point.
This
was masterfully orchestrated.
Yes, it was.
By the Pentagon propaganda department, by the State Department, and so forth. We know now that the, you know, Colin Powell in his UN speech lied. We know now that you know, Bush and Cheney lied, that Tony Blair lied, but nobody reacts to it.
What's your opinion on today's development on the Patriot Act with the House Republicans?
To be honest, I've not been able to see the latest update on today's development. What is it?
Basically, the 34 Democrats and 26 Republicans that had previously voted for an extension of the Patriot Act voted against it today yesterday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it surprised a lot of people because it went against what the Republicans are looking for, as well as President Obama.
Maybe there's a nice ray of hope there.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for too. I was like, well,
I, to be honest, I just haven't my computer's in the shop, and I haven't been able to follow it today yet.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back with F. William Engdahl on Food Integrity Now.
I'm Carol Gervais, and I'm a certified life coach and one of the hosts of the Food Integrity Now show right here on Castle Rock Radio. Have you ever dreamed of swimming with the wild and free dolphins? I'm not talking about the ones in captivity like the ones at Dolphin Quest. I'm talking about swimming with them in the wild. If this is something you've only dreamt about doing, I invite you to mark this off your bucket list now and join me for an all-inclusive trip to swim with the wild dolphins. Your trip to paradise will include organic gourmet meals, ocean waterfront accommodations, Lomi Lomi massage, and much more. What are you waiting for? Now is the time to make your dream a reality. For more information, go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or contact me at carol@coachwithcarol.com or 719-687-7447. Once again, that's 719-687-7447. Mahalo.
If you are looking for some flavorful, healthy, fresh food, come out to Maximilian's Cafe in Woodland Park, Colorado, focusing on local, fresh ingredients with a changing seasonal menu. Located at 209 East Midland Avenue, Woodland Park, Colorado, right off Highway 24 in downtown. Our walls are full of local artist artwork, and on Friday and Saturday nights, we feature local singers, songwriters, and performers to entertain you while you relax and enjoy a fun environment, a glass of wine, and fantastic food. Open 7 days a week from 11 to 9 p.m., 11 to 8 p.m. on Sunday and Monday.
Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We've been talking with F. William Engdahl about his book, Full Spectrum Dominance. And up until now, we've been focusing on how the U.S. and the Pentagon has used that agenda in regards to creating conflicts and crises and promoting conflict and then feeding off of those conflicts. We'd like to tie it back into food. Food definitely has had a part in that, as William's book Seeds of Destruction so clearly illustrates. William, what is going on in Europe as far as GMO? Has there been any attempt so far to change the non-GMO stance that Europe has taken? And
oh, the fight is intense. The strategy of companies like Monsanto, Syngenta, Bayer, you know, the Bayer aspirin people, and company, the gene lobby, they have targeted the top. They've gotten to Barroso, the president of the European Commission in Brussels, the former prime minister of Portugal. They've gotten to the agriculture minister of the European Union. But there are other ministers from other countries, such as Greece and Austria, who are vehemently against GMO, and so there's a bitter fight going on. The European Food Safety Administration, the scandal recently was broken that many of the so-called independent scientists are actually members of a front organization financed by Monsanto and the GMO giants. Mm-hmm. So they have a huge conflict of interest there. I'm fairly cautiously optimistic about the chances to keep Europe relatively GMO-free, because there's such a grassroots opposition against this, and it's like hormone-fed beef. The Europeans drew the line on that and said, no, we're not going to accept this hormone-fed beef, even if the WTO fines us $100 million a year. Fine, we'll pay the fine. Mm-hmm. Keep our beef consumption free of these antibiotics that the American CAFOs, these factory farm giant industrial installations, pump into their beef. This is not food. This is toxins packaged as meat.
Mm-hmm. I recently had lunch with a woman from Greece last weekend, and it was interesting because she was a little bit hesitant to even eat here because of the amount of GMOs that we have in this country.
Well, I don't blame her.
And it was like, I almost felt like I had to apologize. I'm sorry. Yeah, we're passive here. We allow this. And
well, you didn't have a chance because Father Bush made sure that there was no labeling, that the doctrine of substantial equivalence meant that there was no responsibility taken by U.S. government agencies who have the mandate to be responsible for the food, health, and safety of the population and the animal kingdom, the FDA and so forth, that they did no tests on GMO products. It was, the genie was let out of the bottle. This is the most insane criminal act of probably the last century or even longer. And this ought to be prosecuted under the laws of genocide, and people like George Herbert Walker Bush and every president since him who supports this madness ought to be brought to the dock.
And yet there are so many people that just are buying into it, that, you know,
well, they're
this
ignorant.
Is a way
they
to
don't know anything. They only know that's the culture of passivity, and it's not accidental. I grew up in the 50s, and television wasn't yet such a popular outlet, and people talked more at the dinner table. They read newspapers and debated about things and so forth. They had different opinions, and that's the culture we have to recapture, I think.
Mm-hmm. It really is insanity with the recent deregulation of GMO alfalfa that is Roundup ready, when 93% of the alfalfa crop doesn't even they don't have a need to use pesticides, and we're basically creating a solution for a problem that does not exist.
Well, not only that, but Roundup Ready, Roundup is one of the most toxic substances known to man. It has been tested in universities, independent tests in France and elsewhere, to show that it has a devastating effect on human fetuses. In quantities much less than what's sprayed in your home garden, let alone the aerial spraying of crops from GMO, Roundup Ready crops and so forth. So glyphosate compounds that go into Roundup and the additives they stick into that. This and the other problem is it's creating super weeds.
Right.
Go around America and examine or interview some farmers who are confronted with the super weed catastrophe, and that'll scare the pants out of any healthy farmer who's got his wits still with him.
What's your opinion on how Obama is being influenced to press the GMO agenda? On one hand, he has his first lady who is advocating organic crops and healthy eating, and on the other hand, everyone he appoints to a position in his cabinet is supportive of GMOs, and he himself is pushing the GMO.
Well, I think we ought to leave the first lady out of this. She's irrelevant. She has no elected position. She has no power. Well, maybe she has some power over Obama, although some people question that even. But it's irrelevant. That's a red herring. The point is, Obama appointed Tom Vilsack, who's a Monsanto man, from as Agriculture Secretary. He's appointed Michael Taylor, the Monsanto lawyer who created the doctrine of substantial equivalence under Father Bush, as a lobbyist for Monsanto years ago. It's a Monsanto-run policy. It's a GMO policy because it's a policy. It was created by the Rockefeller Foundation, as I said in the Seeds of Destruction book. This is a much bigger project than simply corporate greed of Monsanto. This is about controlling life on the planet. This is a eugenics agenda that these powerful families have dreamed about for more than a century. How to control these masses out there who threaten to take our fortune away. They might get angry and say, we're not going to bail out Citibank and Chase Manhattan and Goldman Sachs and all these people with taxpayer money. We're going to demand our just rewards here and take it away from George Bush and David Rockefeller and Bill Gates and some of these people. Mm-hmm. That's what they're terrified of.
So
eugenics is a way to keep people, reduce the population. I think another thing is the vaccination agenda that they have. Keep people as weak and sickly as possible. Let them be strong enough to get a decent day's work out of them, and then weak enough that they can't think about anything else.
Would we have been seeing these same GMO policies being enacted no matter what president made it into office?
Oh, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. I don't think George Bush... Look, you've had the same policy from Father Bush. You've had it from Bill Clinton, who's a clone of the Bush family, according to reliable reports. You've had it from Bush Jr., George W., and you've had it from Obama. So there's a power there that's a national strategic priority. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has backed Terminator seeds of Monsanto even when Monsanto was afraid to go on the line backing Terminator in 1999. USDA said this is a way to get U.S. exports of vital crops onto the world market. Terminator. You can sell the seeds to developing countries, and then they commit suicide after one harvest. You're forced to go back to Monsanto. So
it seems like, too, it seems like that the U.S. is using this technology for continuing to have dominance, but it also seems like there's been some leverage used in the U.S. by some of these families that you're talking about for their own agenda, and they don't have a national allegiance, so to speak.
I think their only allegiance is to their own power.
Right.
You know, Lord Acton said something like a century ago, he said, a British politician, he said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And the madness of this full-spectrum dominance doctrine of the Pentagon is that it's an attempt for absolute power.
Right.
And this is the most destructive thing that could happen to America. It's the most destructive thing that could happen to the world. And the only one who thinks it makes sense is a bunch of mad families who are mentally deranged enough to think that they're the gods of the universe.
Exactly.
They're not.
You know, well, we actually have to wrap it up. I would love to talk with you again on the show, and I think we'd have some more interesting things to say. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you, William.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, next week at our show, we're going to be having Larry Jacobs from Jacobs Organic Farm. And in December, Larry Jacobs won an appeal in California's 6th Appellate District Court, which affirms farmers' rights to sue for damage to crops from pesticide drift, which was a huge win. He had some product that he was selling to Whole Foods, which interestingly enough, Whole Foods tested, and it had pesticides, which led to this. So this is going to be an interesting show. So thank you for listening to Food Integrity Now, and please stay tuned for Empowerment Through Healing with Tammy Urbanek. We'll be back next week.